Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, October 9th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's good to have you with us. On today's show, folks from Planned Parenthood will outline services and preview a fundraiser on Wednesday. City Manager Rory Watt will highlight the city's Commission on Aging. We'll talk with Alita Buss about this Tuesday's mudrooms. Brenda Wright will detail this month's Autobahn presentation. And we'll hear about the Alaskan Brewing Company's recent gold medal at the Great American Beer Festival. Those interviews, National Native News Writers Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local, on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Many cities, some states, and institutions across the country are recognizing the contributions of indigenous people instead of the federal Columbus Day holiday. In Alaska, the state has permanently established the second Monday in October as Indigenous Peoples Day. The governor signed a bill into law for the holiday in June. The University of Fairbanks, for the first time, will hold a community Indigenous Peoples Day celebration. Each campus will host culturally relevant events associated with the Alaska Native people, culture, and language in their regions. Ellsworth Air Force Base near Rapid City, South Dakota, has named a building in honor of a Lakota woman who was the first female Native American military pilot in World War II. As Jim Kent reports, Millie Rexroth learned to fly before she could drive and spent her entire career associated with flying.
At a time when women were serving the war effort in secretarial and typist jobs for the U.S. government, Oglala Lakota Millie Rexroth wanted to do much more.
I thought if I could do something like fly.
Millie paid for her own flying lessons, earned her pilot's license, and joined the Women's Air Force Service Pilots after the Marine Corps turned her down. She was one of some 1,000 elite female pilots who ferried planes, pulled gunnery targets, or worked as flight inspectors for the Army Air Force. After the war, Millie was one of the first female air traffic controllers for the Federal Aviation Administration, a job she stayed with until she retired. U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Miranda Simmons learned about Millie as the military branch was preparing to celebrate its 70th anniversary. Simmons says the recently deceased Lakota pilot's story fit perfectly into the anniversary's theme, breaking barriers.
What she did at an early age in breaking barriers and starting her career as a WASP pilot just spoke volumes about the heritage of the Air Force.
The building named after Millie Rexroth houses various airfield agencies at Ellsworth Air Force Base, including air traffic control. That makes it a fitting tribute to a woman, says Simmons, who was an inspiration to so many. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The Canadian government has pledged to pay more than $800 million in a settlement to victims of the so-called 60s scoop. From the mid-1960s to the mid-80s, thousands of children were taken from their homes and placed in the care of non-Indigenous families. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
As the children from the 60s scoop grew older, many never even knew their past history. Some were physically or sexually abused. Many suffered racism and bullying. The government policy sparked lawsuits, and earlier this year a court in Ontario ruled that the government was liable for the harm it caused. The settlement includes $750 million in compensation for the victims, $50 million for a healing foundation, and $75 million for legal fees. Colleen Cardinal was a baby when she and her two older sisters were taken from their home in the early 70s. Cardinal, now an activist, says the settlement is not enough.
I'm a little bit disappointed in the number being so low, because I believe somebody had said it works out to about $7 a day. I don't know what amount of number would be adequate. You can't buy back culture and wellness, but I would like to think that we're, you know, the crimes that have been committed against Indigenous children is worth a little bit more.
Cardinal does say she is somewhat relieved by the settlement and the announcement of a healing foundation. But other survivors say there is no measure for the loss of family, community, culture, and language, which has permanently altered so many lives. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Northern Arizona University, a university committed to serving Native American students, offering opportunity in every direction, in Flagstaff, at community colleges around the state, and online. Learn more at nau.edu. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon. It's pretty nice outside, 48 degrees here in the capital city. Here in Studio A with me now are folks from Planned Parenthood. We have Deb Gregoire, Allison Curry, and Andrea Budbill. And we're going to be talking about services, the teen council, what's going on in the state with Planned Parenthood, and a fundraiser this Wednesday. Everyone, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right, Deb. If people don't know, you're the health center manager, right?
Correct. Yes, I am.
If people don't know what Planned Parenthood is or where it is, mm-hmm. please explain that to us.
Absolutely. Yeah, our health center is located very conveniently in Salmon Creek. We're right on the corner of Glacier Highway and Egan, and we're open 20 hours a week. And we provide reproductive health services for men, women, and teens. Almost 30% of our services are annual wellness exams, and those are for men and women. And we do a lot of STI testing.
STI?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sexually transmitted infections.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. And that's really important. I was listening on the radio yesterday on public radio, and they were talking about a study that just came out indicating that nationally between 2015 and 2016, the rates of gonorrhea have increased 18% nationally, and everybody was shocked and appalled. And in Alaska, that number is 31%. So that combined with chlamydia rates in this state, which are the highest in the country, STI screening is a really, really important service in our state and in this community. So we want people to know that we're there for that. We're experts in it, and we want people to get tested.
You know, I heard those pieces yesterday on public radio, too. Mm-hmm. I thought gonorrhea and chlamydia were gone, but no.
No, they are not.
They're
and it's
here.
really all ages. Too. So we really encourage people of all ages to come in and get tested.
Okay. I know you have a lot more services.
Yeah.
Let's get back to those in
mm-hmm.
just a second.
Sure.
I know some of the things that you do, Andrea, are among them is the Teen Council. What is it?
Yeah. So Teen Council is a group of local teens we have here in Juneau. We have 9 members from a couple different high schools. And this is actually the 6th year that it's been in Juneau. This is my first year with it. I'm coming from an education background in rural Alaska and returning to my hometown of Juneau. But we have 9 really enthusiastic members this year. They serve as sort of peer educators. So if they're, you know, in their high schools, people know who they are. They know, oh, you're a teen council member. Maybe somebody wants to know where they can access birth control, and that person, the teen council member, can tell them that. They also receive a lot of really in-depth training on sexual health topics, which can range from STIs to intimate partner violence to healthy relationships to, you know, what is gender identity and sexual orientation. So they become experts amongst their peers. And they teach with me in classrooms and also around the community. They are considered volunteers for Planned Parenthood, and they receive a lot of training. It's a big time commitment. It's about 2.5 hours each week plus additional time serving in the community and in the classrooms. So, yeah, they are very enthusiastic, like I said. And we have a couple of members who returned for their second year, and then a couple of members who are brand new.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you said nine, right? Mm-hmm. High school, middle school?
High school, yeah. Okay. We have sophomores through seniors this year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Allison, you're the legislative liaison and field organizer.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
What's on your radar right now?
A few different things. So earlier this year, there were two attempts at the federal level to repeal the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. And within those efforts, there was an attempt to defund Planned Parenthood. And what that means is it would block Medicaid patients, Medicaid recipients, from receiving preventative services at our health centers. So about half of Planned Parenthood patients in Alaska are low income. They're either Medicaid recipients or uninsured and benefit from federal Title X grants. So there have also been efforts to carve Planned Parenthood out of the federal Title X program. So this would be devastating for half of our patient population who would no longer be able to get access to birth control or STI testing, treatment, and wellness exams.
Okay. Deb, we were talking about mm-hmm. services earlier. I was looking at your website, and you even mentioned it. You have men's health services mm-hmm. as well. I don't think we think of that too much when we think of Planned Parenthood.
We don't, but we do see that the number of male patients is increasing. And, in fact, our number of new patients in the Juneau Health Center is increasing. We're about 20% higher number of visits this year than we were last year. So we're seeing more people from the community, from all walks of the community as well.
Earlier you mentioned 30% of your clients are just in for wellness
mm-hmm.
exams.
Exactly, and that's actually one of the biggest questions we get from people who are, you know, supporters of Planned Parenthood and want to engage with us but think that they don't need any of our services. One of the ways that we tell them what they can do to support us is use their insurance and come get their wellness exam, their yearly exam, their PAP, and their breast checks from us. And the more people that are using insurance to access our services, the more we are able to offer reduced cost services to people who are under or uninsured.
Okay. Now, I understand that you will be having a fundraiser mm-hmm. on Wednesday. Tell us about that.
Yes, this is pretty exciting. It's going to be at Amalga Distillery, and it's going to be from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Tickets are almost sold out. They're available online. But the biggest important part of this fundraiser is that all proceeds are going to support our activities here in Juneau. So they're not going to be dispersed out of state or really even out of town. So it's a way for people really to support what we're doing here locally.
And I noticed Juneau Healthcare Expansion. Is that part of what this will be?
Yeah. So we own our building, and basically we're expanding into an unused space in the building primarily to support our teen council and the growing work that they're doing. So they needed some more space, and we're trying to make that happen.
Okay. Andrea, how do you find your teen council members?
That's a good question. So I'm actually fairly new to this job, and I wasn't part of this process last year. But it's sort of a long process. There's they have to apply. They have to interview. It's a lot of going into the schools and recruiting. A lot of the times, people who are friends of teen council members end up wanting to be involved. And so because it is a really big commitment, the selection process has to be, pretty strict. But they learn a lot of skills. So it's not just people who we believe already have great presentation skills or something, because part of the program is also to teach them, you know, how do you present in front of a classroom? Or, you know, a lot of them want to work on public speaking skills. A lot of them are a little nervous about it, but it's, you know, it's a fun, safe way to practice and learn those skills, and then also just to become really knowledgeable in anything to do with sexual health. So, yeah, it's anybody who has an interest in wanting to sort of serve their peers in that way, serve as an advocate or just like a resource. They have a lot of knowledge, and I learn a lot from them. And it's kind of fun. We could all they learn from each other as well.
You're saying public speaking. Maybe next time you come on, bring them on the show.
Yeah, good idea.
So this fundraiser supports the Teen Council, among mm-hmm. other things. Mm-hmm. It's this Wednesday. What's it called?
It's called Party to Protect Your Parts. And if people want to get tickets, that, like I said, they're all online, and they can. The easiest way to find them is to find the Facebook event, Party to Protect Your Parts. And our affiliate is a mouthful. It's Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest and Hawaiian Islands. We're a four-state affiliate. So what you can also do is email RSVP at ppgnhi.org. So that's Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest and Hawaiian Islands.
And like you said, you're right there on Facebook, and I found mm-hmm. you just by Googling Planned Parenthood, you know,
right.
pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else any of you would like to add?
I'd like to add one other sort of new exciting thing we have in Juneau, and one of the reasons why we are expanding is because along with Teen Council, the education department does like family programs, and we have a new grant this year for a program called LIFT, which stands for Linking Families and Teens. And it's a really cool program where we offer like a one-day training to families and teens, and it doesn't have to be just parents. It could be a teen might bring somebody, just a trusted adult in general, somebody who they want to build on their relationship with. And they learn good communication skills. They learn how to have tough talks, which really most people can benefit from learning those skills and building them up. So that's really exciting. Juneau is one of the few communities in Alaska who is going to receive this programming this year, because we're considered rural because of our location. So it's very exciting, and yeah, something I'm excited to bring here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was the voice of Andrea Budbill. Also on the show, Allison Curry and Deb Gregoire. Thank you all for coming on the show.
Thanks for having
See
us.
You
for
Wednesday.
Having us. Wednesday, 6 to 8 at Amalga Distillery.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired, and when I knew I had to face another day, Lord, it made me feel so tired. Before the day I met you, life was so unkind. You're the key to
Are you uninsured? Open enrollment for the Health Insurance Marketplace is November 1st to December 15th. Start the new year insured. Health insurance allows you to get the care you need and protects you from high, unexpected medical costs. Go to www.healthcare.gov, the official website, or call the toll-free marketplace line and apply over the phone. You don't have to figure things out alone. For free local assistance, contact Search Outreach at 966-8662. We serve everyone.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Monday, October 9th. It's about 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host today. And in the studio now is City Manager Rory Watt and Assemblyperson Lauren Jones. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Nice to have you here. I want to start with you, Rory. City Manager, tell us a little bit about what you do here in the city, how you, say, communicate with the Assembly and how you work with the mayor, that kind of stuff.
Sure. Well, being city manager is it's a pretty wide and diverse job description, but it's basically being in charge of the day-to-day operations of the city. I'm the administrative head of the city, and so you know we do all kinds of things in Juneau. We have a police department and a fire department and water and wastewater utilities and road maintenance group and a bus system and on and on and on. And so it's the you know, it's the nuts and bolts of running a city.
Okay. And how do you communicate and work with the mayor?
I communicate with all the assembly members. So we've got the strong manager form of government. And what that means is I'm operationally in charge. It's not the same in all Alaskan cities. And the mayor, he chairs the assembly meeting, I think is the best way to think about it. He also has a lot of ceremonial duties. So in reality, you know, the mayor is, you know, available to the public to engage with people on a whole host of issues, as are all the assembly members. And so it's a lot of coordinating between me and all nine of my bosses.
Okay. And how long have you been manager now?
It's been about a year and a half.
Okay. Lauren, how long have you been an assemblyperson?
After this election, I'm just starting my sixth year.
Okay.
So I've had one term of 3 years, and I'm 2 years into my second term.
Okay.
So if I choose to run, I have to run next year.
6 years, though? You must enjoy it.
I do.
You must enjoy the work.
I do.
Oh, good.
And that, and I serve on the statewide marijuana control board. So between the two, I get a lot of work to do, and it's all volunteer.
What's been a highlight for you in your 6 years?
Well, I've served with four mayors, with the untimely death of one mayor and temporary on one, and two others that were elected. I think that has been the more interesting of sort of everybody's got a different pattern of how they run meetings and how they do their job as mayor. But the assembly's been actually pretty stable. A couple of, you know, we had one incumbent year and a half ago, and then we had one incumbent this year that lost. So we've added some new people, but, you know, I think the fact that we've managed this last 5 years of, turmoil at the state level and, fiscal uncertainty that, with the manager and the finance director and the assembly decisions and discipline, I think we have managed really well to have the city in a really, really good financial position to be able to serve the public despite all the uncertainty around us. I think that's one of the bigger accomplishments.
Okay.
That's not mine. That's all of us working together, even if we have some 5-4 votes, still working together.
What I like to say is we're in a good position on purpose. So both the assembly and the staff, we work really hard to make sure that we make good long-range financial decisions on behalf of our citizens. It's hard, and it's a big deal, but it's also fun and really rewarding.
Okay. Among our citizens are the elderly, and I understand you guys want to talk a little bit about the Commission on Aging today. What is it, and what's it all about?
We do. The Juneau Commission on Aging was first formed in 1977. And it has provided an avenue for citizens to meet and talk about issues affecting seniors and providing that advice to the assembly. And they've had more or less success over those terms of getting involved and not. And and really working through a lot of issues. But since 77, I got here in 75, the population's doubled or more. We have a growing senior population. I think it's getting close to 18-19% of the population and growing. In the last year, the current Commission on Aging was seven members, struggled to have a quorum, struggled to find a focus, had really well-meaning people, but through health and other issues, just couldn't keep it together. So we met with some of those trying to decide. It's very, very important that we have this Citizens Advisory Group. It's very, very important that they have a task that they can feel accomplished at and work toward. So we met with them, tried to figure out what that was, reconstituted it with a new resolution, taking it from seven to nine members and giving it four or five really specific duties that will give them an avenue to give advice to the Assembly on decisions we need to make on how they might affect seniors in Juneau. So today, 1:30, we had a meeting. We had about 25 people there. We wanted to talk about that with them, recruit. Anybody that's listening cares to want to contribute to this conversation. We're looking for nine members. We're looking for five that are over the age of 65 and four, as there's no age restrictions. People that care about seniors in Juneau, care about senior issues, whatever they might be, want to apply, get a hold of city clerk's office, go online. And basically, we're going to ask them to help build a coalition of providers in town. There's lots of providers in town that provide bits and services to seniors. Coalesce them once every 6 months to find out what's going on, provide advice. Work on the Juneau Economic Plan as it affects seniors. There's one whole initiative on the senior economy. Retirees are very, very important to our economy with their income and their volunteerism and all of that. Every 10 years, they have done a needs assessment. The last one was done in 2010. We'll need one done by 2020. So that's a good part of what we want them to do. And so we gave them some very specific tasks, and we'll get them some support to help pull that together. So it's really important for the Assembly to have that kind of advice. We just don't have the time to get into it in depth that a group like this would have.
So this Commission on Aging will be nine members, is that right?
That's correct.
And how many do you have so far?
There's one existing member.
Okay.
At the time of the meeting, we had one applicant, and I think we picked up three at the meeting. One applicant actually was in the clerk's office as I was leaving and was taking that back and wanted to reapply and put in some other information. Because of the struggles we've had trying to get people interested, we basically said we want to formulate this group by the end of December or the commission sunsets, and then we'll try to start all over. But right now we're focusing on getting this group, at least seven, hopefully nine members appointed before the middle of December so that they can really begin work in earnest.
Rory?
And really what we want is for the commission to do work for the Assembly. And that's what we try to do with all of our boards and commissions. And if we can't find members, the Assembly is not going to have an organized way to get information about the needs of our seniors. So it's I think it's really important that we find people that are willing to volunteer their time to do that work.
And Lauren, you mentioned that about half of the applicants need to be, or the members should be 65 or over, and half can be any age.
That's correct. It sort of mirrors a little bit what has been common in the past. The state's Commission on Aging, I think it's 60 and over. We put in 65. The prior commission, the resolution, everybody had to be over 65, or a certain number of people could be over 55. But there are a lot of persons that are under 65 that are caring for their parents. They're caring for elderly. They're helping to care for grandparents. They have a real interest in the services provided to seniors, and we want to bring that kind of information and knowledge seeking and energy into this commission. If they find it's hard to recruit, if they think we should lower the age to 60 like the state does, then we can certainly consider that. But for right now, we're sticking with 65 and under 65.
Okay, I think you just outlined well the kind of person that would be good for this committee. If they do want to apply, how can they do that?
They can go online to the city website, look under the clerk's office, boards and commissions. There's a list of vacancies. There's an online application. They can print it, fill it out, fax it in. They can do it online. They can call Beth McEwen, the city deputy city clerk, and she can get them the information. Stop by the clerk's office. They'll help you fill out that information. We're trying to get applications hopefully by November 1st. November 6th, the Human Resources Committee, which I currently chair, I may or may not at once we organize as a new assembly. And if we can get as many as we can by then, we can reopen. There's another Human Resources in early December, and hopefully between those two meetings we can fill all the positions on the commission.
Okay. Lauren Jones, thank you so much. City Manager Rory Watt as well. Anything we're missing, anything you'd like to add?
I think that covered it.
Yeah.
Come down to City Hall and visit us. We like to see our citizens.
All right.
Yeah. And please volunteer. There's this commission. I'm really recruiting for it, but there's 30 others out there. So people can find a niche to volunteer and be part of the process by which the Assembly gets information and make decisions.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, October 9th. We're right at the bottom of the hour, and on the show now is Alita Buss. She is on the storyboard of Mudrooms. Welcome to the show, Alita.
Thank you, Scott.
It's nice to have you here. Tomorrow night, 7 stories, 7 minutes each. Community storytelling event, right?
That's right. The theme is After the Storm. Our profits are going to benefit Trail Mix for this event and the next 3 this fall. I think we have a good couple of good few stories in our lineup. We have a couple, Richard Steele and Louis McVeigh, were in Thailand in 2004 for the big tsunami that hit there. They were about a half a mile apart when that happened, and so they're going to kind of talk about that, which is timely considering all the hurricanes that have been hitting the states and Puerto Rico these days.
Okay. If somebody hasn't been to Mudrooms before, let's see, backing up for a sec, how long have you been on the storyboard?
Yeah, since its inception. This is the 7th season.
So obviously you love it and believe in this community storytelling event. For somebody who hasn't been there, how would you describe it to them and sort of the power of this? I mean, it's packed every time you do it.
Right. So it's really raw, real people live on stage just telling real stories from their life, and it's really a community building event. The stories themselves, but then also just being in the room connecting with people. Maybe you haven't seen their face in a while, and it's a really casual, warm atmosphere to be in the room for the event.
Okay. And again, you said this one, you always sort of support some sort of project in town. This one's Trail Mix.
Trail Mix, yep.
Okay. What else is going on in your season next, I think in November, if I'd only listened?
If only I'd listened, yes. So some regrets, perhaps, or some mistakes made, which we can all relate to. And then I think December is Square Peg in a Round Hole, so misfit stories, maybe feeling left out.
Do you know if you have any openings for your November show?
I think we do have openings in both November and December.
For storytellers.
We're always looking, and maybe you have a story that you would want to share. Maybe you know of someone, or you've heard just recently at a dinner party somebody have a great story. We would hear those recommendations as well without committing necessarily a person, but we always need help recruiting storytellers.
Okay. For more information, where should people go?
Mudrooms.org is our website. All of our upcoming themes are there, and archive stories as well.
Otherwise, see you tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at Northern Light United Church.
That's right.
All right, Alita, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council with KXLL presents A Tribe Called Red, Thursday, October 19th at 7:30 at Centennial Hall. This Canadian electronic music group combines modern hip-hop with traditional powwow drums and vocals with local opener Woos Chi'in Dance Group. Tickets at jahc.org.
You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon on Monday, October 9th. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 20 minutes till the top of the hour. Under a 48 degrees Juneau afternoon. In the studio now is Brenda Wright and also Teresa Svankera. We're going to be talking about the Autobahn presentation on the Tree Swallow Nest Project, and that's happening this Thursday at 7 p.m. at UAS. Teresa, Brenda, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Okay, Brenda, let's start with you. The Tree Swallow Nest Project. Why are tree swallows of interest to
Why
Autobahn?
Are they of interest? Well, you know, when it's a birder and a bird flies really, really fast and acrobatically and comes and spends a little time with you in the summer and eats mosquitoes, how could you not like them?
Uh-huh. So there is an order of of interesting birds, it sounds like. I thought they were all cool and the same. But
oh, well,
no.
You know, some of them spend all the whole year with us, and so we love them best. But the ones that come and go are really bright and shiny and very fun to watch, too.
Okay. When did this project, let's say, start in Juneau or in the state?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question because we've just kind of upped our game. We started in 2015 building some boxes with the help of the Juneau Youth Services School, and they built us some boxes, and we got some tree swallow nest boxes out there, and we've been learning a lot more about the science of it ever since.
Okay. Teresa, I understand you've actually had maybe some of these birds in your hand before.
I did, and I have to tell you, it is quite a magical experience. I went to Fairbanks this summer in mid-June, and I worked with the Alaska Songbird Institute. They have boxes set up in Creamer's Field. If anybody's been there, you know that it was an old dairy, and there's big open fields and meadows around it. And they put up about 103 boxes, these nesting boxes. And the tree swallows are really using them. They were using almost half of the boxes. So it's a really easy way to get them. You can get them, take them right out of the box. You don't have to use mist nets or anything. So it's pretty simple. And I learned how to hold them and how to take measurements, how to put bands on. And one of the things that really struck me about their program in Fairbanks is they have a mentoring program. And they involve high school students. They're interns, and they actually get paid somewhere up to about $500 a summer. And then they also have youth mentoring, like younger kids. And the kids, it's like a summer camp, and they pay money, and that helps fund the project. So it was so amazing to watch the interaction with these kids. And that's part of what I'm going to show this Thursday night during our Audubon meeting, is the pictures of the kids interacting with the birds. And I just really enjoyed it, and I want to share that with people.
So that sounds really interesting in and of itself, is just that sort of citizen science / working with kids. Also thinking about the birds themselves, what kind of data are you trying to find by banding them?
Well, you know, that's the reason the whole thing got interesting to me is because I found out that this particular, not this particular bird in particular, but all insect-eating birds are having a 49 to 50% decline east of the Mississippi River. And we were saying here in Alaska, well, that's terrible, but they'll find out soon what's wrong. And then we'll have plenty of birds here. And then everybody went, well, do we have plenty of birds here? And so that was the question. It's like, well, we need to know more about population data if we're going to actually be able to help save these birds in North America.
Okay. So this presentation will be this Thursday, right, at 7 p.m.?
Yes, that's right. At the UAS Recreation Center. So if you haven't been there, it's a beautiful building, and it's not on the regular campus. It's across the street from the normal entrance to go into the classroom area.
Yeah, right. So if you go around the roundabout and you sort of go up Back Loop Road, you actually take a left to get up into the rec center,
mm-hmm.
right?
You sure do.
All right. Teresa, what can people expect? You already outlined it a little bit, but what else are you going to be showing some images or pictures?
I've got some short little video clips and a lot of images of the kids working with the birds, of taking the scientific measurements, some of the data that we collected. So I'll share all that with you on Thursday.
That sounds like a lot of fun. If people want more information, where can they go?
They can go onto our Juno Audubon webpage, or they could, and that shows you where to send a note to programs, or then there's a telephone number there also.
Okay, and just quickly, Brenda, it's migration season, right? Who should we be looking for flying overhead right now?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. We were just discussing that on the way here. The surf scoters are just newly back in town, mm-hmm. and the Barrows Goldeneye are coming back in big numbers. I saw over 100 yesterday. So it's all our winter residents are coming back to roost with us.
Okay, and you can also talk to these two individuals on Thursday, 7 p.m. at the UAS Rec Center. Teresa Svankera and Brenda Wright, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, but this is the beginning of our winter season, so every second Thursday every month we'll be having a presentation.
Thanks, you too.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Let's assume for a moment that you have a yard that a pair of robins has nested in for 12 years. You may be surprised to learn that it hasn't always been the same pair. Mortality rate is high in our familiar songbirds. For robins, it's around 50% each year once young birds have fledged. If a robin survives to midwinter, it lives an average of 1.7 years after that. The oldest robins in your yard might be about 6 years old, although one banded bird lived almost 14 years. So in a dozen years, you've probably had at least a half dozen robins of each sex involved in nesting. Robins, and most other migratory birds, don't maintain their pair bonds over winter, so they mate anew each spring. But if the same male and female return to the same territory, they're very likely to mate again. If the male has died, another male will likely take over the territory, and the living female may mate with him. Similarly, if the female has died, a new female will mate with the resident male. They may nest in the same shrub, if it's a favorable nesting spot, and to our eyes, it looks as if the same pair of robins has returned. To learn more, come to birdnote.org.
Support for Bird Note comes from Bloomsbury, a publisher of natural history books and birding guides. Critical Critters by Ralph Steadman and Carrie Levy is available now.
On the wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free. I have saved all my ribbons for thee. If I have been unkind, I hope that you can just let it go by.
Listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, October 9th, 2017, about 10 minutes until the top of the hour. Joining me in the studio now is Walt Hayes and Marion Gotchel, and we're going to be talking about the Alaska-Guatemala 2017 Humanitarian Service Team and other things. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you so much.
It's nice to have you here. Walt, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about this project.
Well, your listeners may know that there's been a tremendous resurgence of volunteerism in recent years. The statistics would indicate that last year about 6 million people volunteered for humanitarian service, church groups, service clubs, and it's really quite amazing to reach out in a face-to-face relationship with other people trying to be of help. We see that, I think, in our culture today because you find kids getting out of college doing a gap year. They want to see the world. They want to get a taste for what might be there and where they might go vocationally. And we also, right now, even in high school curriculum, and Lions are a part of this, I'm a Lion, we talk about service learning as a part of becoming a whole person. Well, I've had the great opportunity to be a volunteer in Guatemala on five occasions over the past year since 2010, and to have led three teams. And this past year, I worked with a team of 18. Two were Junoites, Blaise Bellows, MD, and Sarah Sonstadt, an advanced nurse practitioner. And we went to Guatemala for 10 days, tackling a number of projects for an underserved Mayan population. We conducted four rural health clinics, served about 170 people. We distributed this amazing Days for Girls feminine hygiene kits, which helps young women deal with the natural fact of becoming a young woman and having a monthly period. And, of course, the most important thing, it helps them keep them in school. So women from throughout Alaska, including Marion and volunteers here in Juneau, made those kits, and we delivered 455 of them. As Lions, we're very concerned about site conservation, so we screened about 570 people for glasses, delivered 300 pairs of prescription glasses, and then had a distribution of readers, the kind you buy in a regular store, to about another 800 people. And we topped it all off by helping a volunteer fire department remodel the building, and we built an outdoor shed kitchen for a Mayan elder. Okay. So it was quite a wonderful group of folks. We sort of bit off more than we could chew, but we chewed it, and I think we did a lot of good.
Excellent.
And it does give one a sense that you cannot get by just writing a check. I think anybody who goes on this type of opportunity, whether it's with Habitat for Humanity, with a church mission team, with a service club, comes back and says, I am the person that benefited. I am the richer from my experience.
Absolutely. Marion, besides putting those kits together, what's your relationship to this project?
I'm a part of Capital City Quilters, and they did a major part of these kits. There was a lot of sewing to be done. And also, I'm a part of Northern Light United Church. And we had half a dozen women or so that made parts of these kits and assembled them.
Okay. Well, you're going to be giving a talk at the library on Thursday, is that right?
Tuesday.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, can you give us the details on that, or both of you?
Well, we will have materials there that we can show what the kits consisted of and how, you know, if you have some sewing skills, you might want to make some of these kits. And so we just wanted to get people acquainted with the idea. It's a growing project that a lot of women get enthused about because it's a part of everybody's life, all women's lives. So it's a very, I mean, these women have a future if they get an education.
Okay.
And most of all, it helps girls stay in school. This movement, which is only about 8 years old, of Days for Girls, which grew out of Washington State, now has distributed 640,000 of these kits in 100 countries. and in Uganda and Kenya, where they've been distributed, they've tracked this. Absenteeism among girls has dropped from like 36% to 8%. So you can see what an impact it has on the life of these young women. And I should add, Marion and her husband Don were a part of our 2013 team to Guatemala. The Northern Light Church very graciously donated a house for a Mayan lady, which we constructed. And you do come back from these kinds of experiences saying, wow, did I win the lottery or what? My life is blessed. My community, my politics, my state, my life may not be perfect, but my goodness, you know, I have a job and I have health insurance and a pension and a safety net. And the underserved people of the world have none of that. And I just I would encourage anyone, if given the opportunity, you know, run, don't walk, sign up. Make that a part of your life experience, because you will be blessed by it.
Okay, we have about a minute left. I'm thinking about tomorrow from 5 to 7. What can people expect?
Well, Marion will have displayed the Days for Girls kits and let people know how they can be involved. I also have a PowerPoint that will summarize these projects that I mentioned, and we'll chat a bit about what it takes to put together a volunteer service team. You just don't do it next week. It takes about a year and a half to 2 years to plan it, to raise the monies, to make the contacts, and to know that you really are going to try to be of help to the agenda of the people in need and not simply go in as a visitor with your agenda.
Okay. If people want more, if they can't make it to the meeting tomorrow from 5 to 7 at the downtown library, where can people get more information?
Well, I'm available to talk to anyone who wants to call or come to one of the programs that will be announced, that we're starting the project up again, and we'll be sending the kits to some other country possibly. So.
All right. That's the voice of Marion Gottschall, and also Walt Hayes here in the studio talking about humanitarian relief in Guatemala. Thank you both so much for coming on the show. Tomorrow, Tuesday, at the downtown library from 5 to 7?
Yes.
All right. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.